Hello and welcome to another episode of the Steel 1 Punter Podcast. I'm your host, Travis, and today we are going to tackle some PSLF buyback stuff. I'm going to be a little brief maybe in the next few episodes just because we do have the holiday season, and I'm betting that you're probably hanging out with your family. I'm going to be hanging out with my family a lot. So we're going to cover just the bare necessities during the next few weeks, unless we, of course, get like an 8th Circuit ruling or we get some sort of major, major announcement on something like pay and ICR reopening up to people. When that happens, we'll probably do an episode about it or maybe a bonus episode. We'll wait and see. So I wanted to talk first about PSLF buyback. I wanted to talk about some of the things that we have been looking at lately that I think that will really help you if you are not yet at the mark of getting PSLF. It'll help maybe calm some really burdened nerves right now. I want to talk about the PSLF buyback program for a bit. PSLF buyback was never, ever intended to be a program that millions of people use, ever. It was created basically as a, hey, now that we've done the PSLF waiver and the IDR account adjustment, just in case this ever happens again, but the Biden administration said, let's create a program where you can buy back periods that you were in deferment or forbearance so that you can hit that 120 mark so that you don't have to wait longer to get forgiveness in case you did already have the qualifying employment, right? That was the purpose of the PSLF buyback rules that went into place around 2023 with this new PSLF regulation that came out. And it's not a part of the SAVE plan, you know, injunction. So the PSLF buyback is not touched by the SAVE plan injunction. Now, the big question is, would a Trump administration try to throw out the PSLF buyback rule, which they could easily do through executive action? I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. The PSLF buyback option, what does it say? What can you do with it? So what you have to do is have 120 months of qualifying employment. And the way to get there is to go to the studentaid.gov/PSLF help tool website and then make sure you've submitted all of your qualifying employment and you've applied for all of that. So you need to have all that qualifying employment on file first. And so after your employment certification form is processed and your payment counts are updated, now you have to verify the months that you want to buy back. So it is very helpful to look at your NSLDS for this. This is that file that you get when you go into your StudentAid website. And you go there and you can see your NSLDS, you can see when you're requesting to buy back periods. What you have to do after that is submit something called a PSLF reconsideration request. So remember the steps. You've got to tell them about your qualifying employment being at 120 months. Wait until everything's processed on that qualifying employment and then submit the PSLF reconsideration request. You can do that at studentaid.gov/PSLF/reconsideration. That's a long word, /borrower-information. And then just rewind that to hear that URL again if you need to, because it's a little bit long. Now, you have to use exact language. This is how dumb student loans are. You have to use exact language in that reconsideration request, or you will not even be accepted at all for your PSLF buyback. So the reason for this is effectively, if you do not include this exact language, then they're going to take you emailing them as a request for information about PSLF buyback and not a formal application for it. I don't know who decided this. It's just nuts, but that's what they did. So the exact language that you have to use, which, by the way, is in the PSLF buyback FAQ on the StudentAid website, so you don't have to like type all this out. I don't want anybody doing that. But the exact language says, quote, I have at least 120 months of approved qualifying employment, and I'm seeking PSLF or TEPSLF discharge through PSLF buyback. Please assess my eligibility for PSLF buyback. So that's the exact language that you have to include. And if StudentAid decides that you're eligible to buy back months, they're going to send you a buyback agreement with the amount you have to pay and instructions to pay the full amount within 90 days of their email to you with the buyback agreement. So just so folks know, what is the buyback amount? How do they determine that? So it's technically the lesser of your IDR plan before or after the period of forbearance, whichever's lower. And so that's kind of like for a forbearance that's supposed to be less than 12 months. Basically, the question is, what if your payment is higher? What if they take away the SAVE plan? What if your payment would have been higher than the standard tenure plan? Well, that's the case. They do use the standard tenure plan. And they say, well, if your IDR payment would have been more than, you know, the standard tenure plan, you can just pay based on the standard tenure plan. That's good, because what that means is, if let's say SAVE is repealed, they might look at the IBR plan and calculate what you'd have to pay based off of IBR if you had been enrolled in that plan instead to calculate your buyback amount. And remember that the standard tenure is supposed to be the fallback option if you wouldn't even qualify for IBR. So let's get some more tangible examples going on here. So save forbearance happened in June. We've been doing that save plan forbearance since June. And let's say they toss the save plan in a court decision, let's say in, I don't know, February or something, right? If that were to happen, then this entire window of forbearance, unless they repeal the PSLF buyback rule, would be eligible for PSLF buyback. So when people hit that 120 months of total payment credit, then they could go ahead and apply for PSLF buyback. Now, when I say payment credit, I meant employment credit, right? Because PSLF buyback, remember, the point of it is to allow people that were working in the qualifying job that had student loans to fix in arrears, looking backwards, what their payment amount should have been with just a lump sum payment. That's the point of it. Now, how could this save somebody a ton of money? How many people that are, you know, attending physicians, let's say, have a payment that's $300 a month from back when they were a resident in 2018? And that's the last time they certified their income ever from before the pandemic. So if that happened, let's say that their payment on the repay plan was $300 a month, and then their payment went down to $100 a month with the save plan. Well, what might happen with that PSLF buyback is they might say, well, if you had to do IBR, the payment instead of being 100 would have been 400 or something. And so they would say, well, 400 times, let's however many months the save plan forbearance lasts, give us a lump sum check for whatever the IBR payment would have been. 400 times, let's say it's 8 months that the save forbearance lasts. So you pay your lump sum $3,200. Let's say you have a $320,000 balance or $300,000 balance. The standard tenure plan on that's about $3,000 a month. So you'd have to pay $24,000 or something like along those lines if you had to pay back with a lump sum over an 8-year period with the standard tenure plan. What I mean by that is the PSLF buyback for anybody who's less than 12 months away from getting PSLF. And, you know, remember this forbearance would be included in that. So with anybody that's in terms of their qualifying employment after they graduated, after they had the student loans in an active repayment status for the first time ever, right? If you are less than 12 months away from getting PSLF, if all this forbearance did count, then I think PSLF buyback could be a thing for you. You have to, again, get all of your employment credit certified first, get the 120 months on the books, and then go do that reconsideration request in a very exacting kind of way. What would happen if they repealed this? What would happen if the Trump administration tried to repeal PSLF buyback and the save plan? Well, first off, it depends on how they do it. So technically, you're supposed to do a negotiated rulemaking, and you have to publish the new rules by November for it to take into effect the following July. So in theory, the way the negotiated rulemaking is supposed to work is you put forward a new rule, and then you take public comment, and you put it out for public comment, and you publish the rule, and then it goes into you have to do all that by November for it to go into effect July. So in theory, they could repeal PSLF buyback and the save plan through, you know, negotiated rulemaking by July 2026. Now, for the save plan, I think it'll be repealed a lot sooner than that with the court cases. And the question with PSLF buyback is ultimately, what if they just don't process anything? What if they just choose to literally not follow the rules that are published and just completely ignore all the applications and just let it sit there and do nothing? Now, if that were to happen, I would get constituent services offices involved of your senator or congressperson. I would look for strategically the person who serves in your state senator, one of your two senators or your congressperson who serves on the education committee. There's the HELP committee in the Senate, Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, and then there's the committee on the education and the workforce or education and labor in the House. And so you could look to see, you know, is anybody on one of those committees that have some sway with agencies? And that would be if, you know, they just did the whole stonewalling, refuse to process anything strategy. I mean, in the Trump administration with PSLF buyback. So I feel fairly confident that anybody in 2025 that could hit 120 months of qualifying employment for PSLF would be able to get that taken care of through PSLF buyback by buying back all these months in forbearance. But you do have to be exacting. You do have to pay attention to the ridiculous nuances that they're asking people to do. And you'd also, frankly, have to be really confident that your payment amount is the right amount. If they offer you a lump sum, do they calculate it the right way? Are they calculating it based off of what the rules say, which is the lower of the 2 months before or after the forbearance and, you know, an income-based repayment plan or the standard tenure plan if it's lower? Are they giving you that lump sum that's a correct number? For example, the government might just randomly offer you a number that's too high, and then you'd pay a number that's too high and you'd lose thousands of dollars, right? So these are some of the things that our team is thinking through to try to make sure we're always staying on the cutting edge of student loans And isn't it ridiculous that it has to be the cutting edge because something's always changing? But, you know, lo and behold, that's the way the world works with student loans. We're going to continue, again, putting out content that's not just PSLF related. In terms of income-driven repayment, those folks were going to be offered a buyback program for income-driven repayment that would have happened if Vice President Harris won. But because she did not, the IDR buyback option is not going to happen at all, for sure, I think. Then the SAVE plan, if the courts don't overturn the SAVE plan ICR statute that the whole program is based off of, then what we might see, as crazy as it sounds, is them repealing the SAVE plan with a new repayment plan that is as yet unannounced and undetermined. And this is, again, because, you know, the Trump administration could get rid of the SAVE plan through executive action and then just get rid of that old plan and replace it with a new plan that they create. So those are all things that we're going to need to be monitoring. The other thing I'll say we'll need to be monitoring is refinancing rates. We're going to have to be paying attention to that closely to see if refinancing rates come down at all, if they start getting into the fours. I mean, we saw somebody get supposedly a 3.75 fixed rate the other day on a shorter term loan. And I was like, how's that even possible? Because the 5-year treasury is like 4. So that was really weird. And sometimes, I'll just say this, sometimes when risk is on, and it's very much on at the moment I record this, right, with Bitcoin at 100,000, a lot of risky, high variance assets being highly priced, whenever that happens, you do sometimes see like student loan refi companies kind of falling over themselves to give people deals for different things. So maybe you're a PSLF borrower, maybe you have some private student loans. I mean, I would certainly think studentloanplanner.com/refi is a good time to go and look on your private student loans to see if you could lower your rate if you didn't do it in the super low rate environment of 2021 and 2022. And because it's definitely not anywhere close to that good, but it could be much better than the high rates we saw like more recently this summer, for example. And, you know, if you are in this, I got to pay down my loans camp. Well, let's just go ahead and see how long this zero interest save plan forbearance lasts, because we don't want to do anything before that ends because of how all this stuff has happened. And it'll also be interesting to see how fast does Trump's Department of Ed force borrowers to recertify their incomes for the first time in some cases in several years. Do they even ask people to recertify their incomes? I think they probably will, but we're going to have to watch and see what the speed of things is. I do think it's going to be a lot faster than last time, though, in terms of their boldness of trying things out and trying to, you know, implement policy. I think it's going to be a lot faster this time than it was the prior first Trump administration. So we have to monitor all this. And of course, we'll do it on this podcast. If you have any questions, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. We'll feature you in a future pod episode. And if you need a plan, contact your planner if you're working with SLP Wealth, or go to studentloanplanner.com/book if you need to refresh your plan or get a new one. Thank you all so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your week.